Hey kids, it is me, your dude, Icy Robots, and we're back with another super exciting, super fun episode of World Famous. This time out, we're going to talk about some books I read, we're going to talk about Rubik's Cubes, we're going to open up an action figure, it's going to be great, but until we can get to that greatness, Grandmaster Grandpa, kick that beat!
Okay, Icy Robot, let's get this party started right, let's get this party started quickly. This is World's Famous with IC Robot.
What's up, everybody? This is me. I hope that life is treating you well. I hope that everything is going good. I hope that there are no major obstacles in your path this week. I think that for at least the next hour or so, you're going to have a good time. We're going to talk about all kinds of cool stuff. Lately, like recently, over the past couple months or so, I've heavily gotten into the world of puzzles. Not jigsaw puzzles. I'm talking about, like, mechanical puzzles, like wooden puzzle boxes and things like that. I have, so far as we speak, solved two difficult puzzles. The first one is a puzzle known as the Waiter's Tray. These are put out by a dude named Constantine. He makes these interesting puzzles, and the one that is called the Waiter's Tray, it's wooden wine bottles, and you have to move them up and down, and the point is to try to remove this one stick. It all appears as if it's, you know, it looks like it's a little tray, and you have to move them up and down in the right combination to get the bar out. And then there was another one that I solved, another Constantine puzzle. And this one was a little different. It was two discs. It's like a double maze. It's called Double Trouble. And it's two mazes, and you have to try to get a ball, a little metal ball, out of each maze. There are two in total. You have to get them both out at the same time. It's a really ingenious puzzle, because the more you move one, the more the other one gets jammed up. It's really, really cool. I picked this one up over at Barnes & Noble's. If you're looking for some Constantine puzzles, you can find them at Barnes & Noble's. So far, I think that I enjoyed the Waiter's Tray more than I did the other one. The Waiter's Tray took me maybe 2 weeks to solve, and then the other one I was able to solve in a day, but I think that it was kind of by accident. I wasn't really, in the planning stages. I was just kind of moving the discs around, seeing how things worked, and then all of a sudden, the two little ball bearings were lying in my hand. Then I started all over again. I put the balls back in and mixed it all up, and I was able to solve it in a couple hours. Not a very difficult puzzle. I don't think that by any stretch I'm a puzzle genius. We'll soon learn that I am not, but I was able to get through this one in a quick time. Go look the two of these up. The Double Trouble Constantine puzzle and the Waiter's Tray Constantine puzzle. This guy Constantine, I don't know a lot about him. I don't think it's John Constantine from DC Comics. I think it's a different guy. But he makes, these really ingenious puzzles. The way that they all work together, it's really just a lot of fun to get into these and to solve them. It's making my brain feel good. The period of time in which I'm goofing around with these things, I really feel engaged. I really feel cool, and I feel smart. This seems like something a smart guy would do. And in trying to continue my work into being a smart guy, I went out and I got a Rubik's Cube. I actually picked this up at the flea market from a guy that I do not like. One time this guy, he ran into my car, and then he said that I tried to run into his car. It was all kind of a homeless guy insurance scam. It's fine. If this is what he has to do to get through life, it's fine. But I don't really like to buy his wares. But he had a brand new Rubik's Cube on his table for only a dollar, and I had to have it. I felt like this was the obvious next evolution into my life of becoming a puzzle boy. And man, the Rubik's Cube is heckin' hard. I'm not even kidding. There are a million different ways in which people say you can solve it, and each one is more difficult than the next. Do you guys play with Rubik's Cubes? Has anyone out there had any success? Has anyone out there listening right now solved a Rubik's Cube without having to go to a how to solve a Rubik's Cube FAQ on the internet? Let's take a quick break. Our guy produced a bit of an essay on the Rubik's Cube, and we can hear that, and then we'll come right back.
Rubik's Cube essay, let's go! What is a Rubik's Cube? Let everyone out there know.
The Rubik's Cube is a 3D combination puzzle invented in 1974 by Hungarian sculptor and professor of architecture Erno Rubik.
What was it called originally?
Originally called the Magic Cube, the puzzle was licensed by Rubik to be sold by Pentangle Puzzles in the UK in 1978, and then by Ideal Toy Corp in 1980 via businessman Tibor Laxey and Seven Towns founder Tom Creamer.
Everyone loved the cube worldwide. How many were sold?
As of January 2024, around 500 million cubes had been sold worldwide, making it the world's best-selling puzzle game and best-selling toy. The Rubik's Cube was inducted into the U.S. National Toy Hall of Fame in 2014.
That is all you need to know. That was a cool, rocking, informative package.
I agree, that was a cool, rockin' informative package. I know a lot more about Rubik's Cubes than I did 1 minute and 25 seconds ago. Good stuff. The Rubik's Cube is so difficult. It's so hard. It feels to me as if it's almost, it's like an impossibility to do this without using some kind of cheat. But people do. People do it. And what one man can do, another can do. We learned this from Charles in The Game, a classic film, 5 Mike Hall of Famer, The Game.
Ah! I don't think it'll work, Charles.
It will work!
No.
It will work!
What one man can do, another can do.
What one man can do, another can do.
And again!
What one man can do, another can do.
And again!
What one man can do, another can do!
Yeah, you're goddamn right.
So far, the most I've gotten is 2 sides at one time. I got the white side and the yellow side. Experts say you first want to do the white side, and then you want to do the yellow side, and then the rest of it should kind of fall in order. That wasn't really the case for me. I managed to follow the whole thing up again, and I haven't been able to get 2 sides since. The hard part about it is, like, you do it, and you get into the zone, you get into the cubing zone, you're doing it, and then all of a sudden, like, you get some success, and later you fall out of the cubing zone, and you lose that success you had. Very difficult stuff. I've seen people do it blindfolded, so I know that there is a trick to it, and I looked up the trick, and I will now share it with you, and you could all become speed cubers as well. What you do is you get the cube into one of many different starting positions. The one that people seem to prefer is called the daisy, where you have the yellow square in the center, and it's surrounded by all the white squares, like a flower, a daisy, a margarita. And then from there, there's like a certain preset way that you can turn each direction and get there. So when you see dudes doing the cube, what it really is almost like a contest to see who can be the first to get to the daisy and then go through the different maneuvers to get it solved. I don't want to do that. I don't want to memorize the solution. I want to come to it myself. At first, I was going through the idea that, like, I'll try to get these 2 sides and then I'll get each side individually. But now I'm kind of working on the process of where everything is going to have to fall into place to get all sides simultaneously. Now, I don't know if this is possible. I don't know. And I don't know how much longer I can work on this before going and getting another Constantine puzzle just because I need the feeling of success. That's the thing with the puzzle, man. When you're doing it, it's difficult. You're having a hard time. You're frustrated. But that moment when you solve it is fantastic. It's euphoric. I remember when I was doing the waiter's tray, and I was having difficulty with the waiter's tray. The waiter's tray is not easy. I was having problems doing it. And then all of a sudden, everything came into place, and I slid the bar out, and man, I felt euphoric. I felt like I was just going to fly away into outer space. And I know that when I eventually solve this Rubik's Cube, it's going to be so great that I'm going to fly back to Jupiter's 3rd largest moon, known as Callisto, to see my guys, Iceberg and Emily, and catch up with them, because I will just be floating through space. Let's move forward. I think that we've spent enough time learning about the world of cubing. If any of you guys have some cube tips, reach out. Hit me up on the threads at Icy Robox. Go to Facebook. Tell me some cube tips. I am curious. Let's all have fun and let's go do puzzles.
Our next bit of information is on Icy Robot's recent purchase of a G.I. Joe figure of some sort. Let's hear something about that.
If you insist.
Let's hear something about that.
If you insist.
We definitely do insist. This is me, Icy Robots, and we're back. I have something in my hand right now that I wanted when it first came out. I did not get it. It was a little bit too pricey for my super cheap toy blood, but I have it now. It's in my hands right here. It's another recent Ross acquisition. Ross has been the spot lately. Honestly, though, I did go to the Ross yesterday, and there wasn't a whole lot there. Like, not a lot at all. But it kind of looked like they might be getting ready for, like, some kind of a reset, because the shelves were starting to get bare. So let's hope maybe they get some more things. But what I have in my hand right here is G.I. Joe Classified Series number 52, Snake Eyes and Timber. I got this for $11.99. I was so excited. I saw on a G.I. Joe Facebook group that some homeboy over in some state found one of these. And I said, well, let's go take a look and see if I can find one, too. And guess what? I found one. I was so happy. This was originally $37. That's what the price tag says. I got it for $11.99. I thought that was fantastic. This is one of the more deluxe in the classified series because you get Snake Eyes, and it looks like he has a grip full of accessories. And then you also get Timber, the first in the line of great G.I. Joe mascots. You had Timber, you had Mutt, you had all kinds of them, dude. After a while, it felt like every other G.I. Joe had a pet. You have some pets with Cobras, you got some pets with Dreadnoks. But Timber is where it all started. Timberman, legendary G.I. Joe pet. And Snake Eyes, super legendary G.I. Joe figure. I think that you could say that he might be the legendary G.I. Joe figure. He's the only one that's had like a solo movie of his own. He's Larry Hama's personal favorite character. I heard that at a panel. Y'all know Larry Hama. He's the guy who made up G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, and all the characters. Snake Eyes is his favorite. His second is Storm Shadow. Guy has a thing for ninjas. I like Snake Eyes, and I like Storm Shadow. They're not my favorite characters, but I definitely feel like they're the top of the food chain as far as this goes. This version of Snake Eyes appears to be the second version 2 from the Greatest American Hero line. The first one, he just kind of has like a hood and what looks to be like sunglasses. Then in the second version, he had like what would be kind of like a medieval knight's like a visor. Like, it looks like a metallic visor, sort of triangular in a way, and it has slits that he could look through, much like a knight of the Round Table would wear when they're rocking the full plate armor. So this is the one that you have here. He also comes with like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guns and a bunch of other stuff. Before we open this up, and trust me, we're going to open it up. We're going to open up the heck out of it. Let's take a quick pause for the cause. We're not going to find out about Snake Eyes. This time, we're going to find out about Timber. It's going to be fun.
Timber is a wolf who befriended Snake Eyes while the commando lived in his cabin. Though Timber became a pet to Snake Eyes, he remained a wild animal and usually stood guard at the cabin when Snake Eyes was away. Hawk and Stalker were met by Timber when they first asked Snake Eyes to join the newly formed G.I. Joe team. Some of the people in the tiny town at the foot of the mountains sometimes referred to Snake Eyes as a werewolf. They believe that Snake Eyes and Timber are the same being. They are not. Timber is unusually intelligent for a dog and can almost understand English perfectly. He is a good boy.
Timber is for sure a good boy. The relationship that Snake Eyes had with Timber, the relationship that any G.I. Joe had with their pet, was kind of like what you wanted out of your relationship with animals. They would go off, and they would be wild, and they would do animal things, but then when you needed them, when you wanted them, they would come and they would be there. That's just like, that's a beautiful thing, man. And that's what the two of them have. Let's take a look at this package. It's kind of big. I feel like I think that maybe it's like a foot across, maybe like 12 by 8. It's all sealed. You can't see any of the things on the inside. Let's get the Arthur Fonzarelli brand switch. We're going to cut this one piece of tape right here. Going to get into the edge, go right through it. Snickety snick. Right through there. We'll sit that aside. Then we're going to open up the flap, and we're going to see what we have on the interior. I'm just going to go ahead and pull this tray off. This first tray here has Timber and Snake Eyes on it. Looks like they're held down by rubber bands, of course. And then there is, it's like a small little, it appears to be like a foot locker, and it says Snake Eyes and Timber, open this way. Also has tape, so we're going to snippity snip through that. Put that there, put the blade aside. Let's open the lid of this and see what's in here. There's some cool items. There's a nice piece of like G.I. Joe paper. These things are wrapped inside the paper. It's a little bag. And then there's another little thing, like a little envelope. There's all kinds of stuff in here. Let's take a look. Cool box. We'll put that aside. These are all held by tape. Let's just get an idea of what's inside of here. A piece of cardboard folded over, cut into that. That's his crossbow. Looks like more of a grappling gun. Like a gun with a grappling hook. And then this is another one. That's the sheath. for his sword. And then here's another one. Cut into this. We're really getting the workout here with the Arthur Fonzarelli brand switchblade cut into that. This is a gun of some kind of machine gun. Then here's another one cut into that. And this is his katana. And then there's a little bag, a little wrapping paper bag. It has G.I. Joe and Cobra logos on it. It's sealed at the top. We're going to get the Vidal Sassoon brand scissors to cut into this so we can open it up. Snippity, snippity, snip, snap, snip. Go into there. And then I'm just going to pour it out on the desk, and we'll see what we have in here. Various instruments. There's a spare head for Timber where he's snarling. Here's like a scarf, another gun, a pistol, a dagger. And then he has some replacement hands. And then that looks like a silencer like we saw in the other one. The last figure, the Tomax and Zaymon. We'll put that on here onto this one. Goes right into here. Right into the nozzle of the... Does it go into his Uzi? Yes, it does. It goes right on his Uzi. I would say the Uzi is the signature weapon of our guy. Oh, these are actually string. I think that we can cut this in the back. I think we can cut this string. Sadly, we will not need the engineer nerd for snips today, but shout out to him irregardless. We're going to use the scissors because these are all strings instead of plastic, which is very good, honestly. Maybe some hemp wires or whatever. So we can just go ahead and get him out. Quite easy. Much easier than with the four snips. And then, oh, this is nice. On Timber, they covered it with tape. We're just going to cut through that. I'm going to go, snip. The Vidal Sassoon snips are very heavy duty, man. They can go through almost anything. And then we're going to go ahead and pull Timber out. Timber is a heavy, heavy piece of plastic. I want to move all this stuff aside. We need to get a little more room on the desk here. Timber's a very heavy piece of plastic. He has a scar on his face. I'm going to go ahead and say this is one of the best action figures I've ever seen of a dog. He has articulation at his paws, 1, 2, 3, his feet, his knees, his head, replaceable head, which we saw. He has a more scary head where he's going, grr. Now let's take a look at Snake here. He has all of his commando accoutrements. Let's put his dagger right into here. This is on his hip. And then he has a holster on the other side for his pistola, which also looks like it would fit the silencer if you so wished. Little piece right here where you can slide the silencer in. So I'm going to say that that is for the pistol, but it also works on the Uzi. And then he has this one here. This is like more of a submachine gun of some kind. I know not what these things are called, but we'll put it in his hand. Goes in his hand nice. Very nice looking figure, I'm going to say. The G.I. Joe classifieds are really, they're really high quality, man. This is another good one. Tons of great accessories. This goes over his head. It's kind of like the kind that you see these guys wearing, like these special ops dudes wear those different kinds of scarves. Those fancy pretty boy scarves that they wear when they're over there. Hold on, let me look back at the box. Let's take a look. We'll compare it. Here he has on the front, he has a shuriken. On this one, he's holding like two different guns at once because he can fight like that. Okay, so let's give that a shot. I mean, why not? We'll put the Uzi in this hand. I think of him as like the Uzi to me. That's the signature gun. That's what he came with in the original OG first version. So to me, that's what I'll always think of him as. So we'll put that in his right hand. We'll put the other one in his left hand. And he's just, you know, he's just out here blazing. Let's make it look like he's riding on top of a Timber. It doesn't quite work. But no, this is a really good figure. I think to put the scarf on, you got to pop off his head. And if you do that, he has a bandolier with a bunch of grenades on it. So we'll take the grenades off. I think it might make the scarf fit a little better. So let's see. Pull off these grenades. We'll set these over here, and then we'll put his scarf on. Yeah, that goes on pretty well. Let's see. We'll get his head back on. The head went on easy enough. Yes, this is a really good figure. I remember when this first came out. I absolutely do. And I saw it at GameStop, and I wanted it. But I wasn't really, like, ready to dive into G.I. Joe Classifieds. And to be fair, I'm still not. I only get these ones at Ross. I see them all the time, and I think that they're very good, very well-made figures with lots of cool accessories. I can't dig all the way in. I really do honestly prefer the Masterverse. But I gotta say, this is a dynamite figure, and I really like Timber. Let's take Timber's face off. See how easy that you heard that pop? We'll put this one back on. Hope it goes on as easily as it came off. And it does not. You kind of have to line it up. Oh, there we go. That's him with his scary face. Grr, look how mean he is. What a good boy. So mean, protecting the cabin. He's probably like, he lives in the cabin all the time. We learned that. And then every once in a while, our guy Snake Eyes, he'll drop in and visit. And Timber's probably like, oh, hey, it's you again. I bet you he doesn't really have that attachment to Snake Eyes that Snake Eyes would imagine that he does. He's probably just like, oh, you're that dude who hangs out at my den every once in a while. Because to him, it's his own den. He lives there. He loves it. There we go. Now I got his face on nice and secure. It was a little loose. Now it's good. Yeah, he looks definitely mean. He has a scar across his face. He might be missing an eye. Maybe he got into a fight with another wolf. Maybe with a mountain lion. Maybe with a polar bear. Maybe with a cobra bat, because he's a good boy and he would fight a cobra bat if they came after him. But nah, he's really cool. My Snake Eyes story is this. I'll tell this really quick. When I was younger, and I'm sure I've told this on the show before, but I like it. It's a good story. When I was younger, I went on a swimming trip with my family. We went to Spring Lake, which is where I still swim to this day in the swimming lagoon. It's nice. I love it. Gonna open soon enough. Gonna be swimming, blah, blah, blubbing away. I was there with my family, and I was walking around in the water, and I felt something by my feet. I felt something with my toes. So I bent down, and I picked it up, and it was Snake Eyes. It was the version one Snake Eyes, the classic all black with the hood, with the goggles. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. This was something I wanted badly, and there it was. I had it. I was so excited. I went down, and I dug around to see if I could find any of his accessories. Of course I couldn't. There's no chance that his explosive pack was still down there along with his weapon. But still, I found him, and I had that Snake Eyes for years. He was like my number one dude in the G.I. Joe lore. He was kicking everybody's butt. Karate kicking Cobra troops. It was great. I loved it. I still think about that every single time I go to Spring Lake. I think about the day that I found Snake Eyes. And look, and here I am, 75 years later, playing with a super deluxe Snake Eyes on FM radio at 92.3 KRJF. Simulcasting at 88.1 KWTF in lovely Bodega Bay. What a weird turn of events. Who would have ever thought that would happen? We got Snake Eyes. We got this new super deluxe Snake Eyes. We got this super deluxe Timber. We got this super deluxe Timber. Oh, his tail moves. You can make his tail wag. Very, very cool. I'll put it up like this so he looks angry. He's like, grr. Let's see if I can put him down and kind of like, you know, that like downward dog positions that dogs take when they sometimes look super aggressive. Let's see if I can put him down like that. And there he is. Anywho, we're going to move forward. We're going to jump ahead. Very cool figure. If you see this one down at your Ross for $11.99, you got to pick it up, dude. Can't beat it. It's amazing. Let's find out. Hey, there's Derek. Let's find out what happened this week in Japanese League Baseball.
Why is it world famous if, like, literally less than, like, nobody has ever heard of it?
Chaji.
Is this, like, an attempt at irony or something? I don't get it.
Chaji.
This week in Japanese League Baseball.
Hello, this is Derek for this week in Japanese League Baseball. In what can only be called a miracle, Steve Balboni Jr. become the first man to hit the dynamite ball before it blew them up. So far, 10 men and 3 bat boys have been obliterated by the dangerous pitch. Many refuse to leave the dugout when faced with a dynamite ball and accept the automatic strikeout. Not Steve Balboni Jr. though. He jumped on an 0-2 dynamite ball and crashed it into the wall for a double. The wall was blown to bits and 3 people were taken to the hospital for emergency care. I haven't heard any follow-up reports on them, but they are probably fine. Balboni Jr. has called for the pitch to be abolished. Will it? Who can say? And even if it does, the floodgates of dangerous pitches is already opened.
That was this week in Japanese League Baseball.
And now a report from what is now called the Bins, or used to be called the Dig. Tell us all about it. I see robots.
Yeah, it used to be called the Dig. Now it's called the Bins, and I was there for many, many hours yesterday. I think that when you historically look at the history of the Dig, you will have there's going to be a dividing line right around the time they reopened after the pandemic. Pre-pandemic, it was the Dig. Now, afterwards, it is the Bins. It is, like, entirely a different place, and I'm not saying this like it's a bad thing, because Back in the day, this was a rough and tumble spot, dude. It was pretty dangerous. If I was, like, somebody who wasn't me, I might be afraid to go in there. If I was somebody who had you know, half a heart, somebody who was a little bit on the lily-livered side, I might be hesitant to go in. Not myself. I'm talking about other people. I might have been a bit hesitant, but now, nowadays, it is like, it's a friendly, inviting, welcome, open place, man. It's really nice in there. There's no pushing. There's no shoving. People are polite. There's no running. I don't even know what to say when I go in there, because I feel as if I'm some savage from the past, from the days of yore. I'm Conan the Barbarian. Shout out to Mark Alley. I'm somebody of that sort in a world of very polite, very kind kids. It's all good though, man. Things change. Things evolve. This is kind of like what I imagine New York in the 70s. Like, one day, you're looking at Times Square and it's full of, like, you know, strip clubs and adult novelty stores and all these things. It's dangerous. Next day, it looks like how it does nowadays. It's almost Disneyland. How things can change, that's the dig. The dig is, it's like pre and post the Deuce New York, man. It's all good though, because when I go in now, it's so mellow. It's so easy. It's so just, I can't even express it. The dig does wear me out though. It kind of emotionally wears me out because there's a lot of close contact. You're in close contact with people, and it just, after a while, it does start to wear on me, and I get super tired. But regardless of that, we were over there and it was all fun. We stayed for, I'm gonna say, like 5 or 6 runs. They do a run like every half hour, every 40 minutes. We stayed for like 5, 6, or 7 of those. I really did not like, hold on one sec. I really didn't score that big when I was there, to be honest. The wife did okay. She went with the wife, the wind in my sails, the love of my life. She was there with me as well. And she got up on some blankets and like a whole grip of clothes. As a matter of fact, the shorts that I'm wearing right now, I got these nice Puma workout shorts. I'm wearing them right now. Gonna wear them to the gym later. That came with it. And she got a bunch of stuff for herself. But me, the dude, I don't know. I got up on, I'm gonna go through my little bag. I have a bag. When you go to the dig, what I find to be the best thing to do is like grab some kind of like a tote bag or something and then start putting your stuff in it. And they'll almost always just give you the tote bag for free, dude. Tote bags are, they're a problem out there. But I got this. This is like a, it's like a labyrinth cube. It's a bank. You have to get the cube all the way through the labyrinth, and that's how you can open it up to get the money on the inside, which is fun, I guess. I like puzzles, like we learned earlier. And this labyrinth cube, it's not like a super difficult puzzle, but it is, it's like a 3D maze, and that's fun. Like right here, you drop it, your maze goes down, your ball rather goes down to the next level. And then you're down over here, and you gotta turn it around to look at it this way. I get it. I think it's fun. I don't know where the end is. I haven't looked at it that closely. I think, did I just get it? I think that I might have just gotten it by happenstance. Yeah, here's where the ball goes. Now how do I, oh, there we go. I just opened it up. There you go, man. You have seen live and in person. Your guy solved a puzzle for you. A 3D maze cube. That's all good, though. It's a kid's toy. It's not like one of our Constantine puzzles. It's more of a baby toy. Let me get my thing here, my bag. I got some blank VHS tapes. I always am on the hunt for VHS blanks. Why, you ask? I have no idea. I hoard them. I got 3 of these Panasonic Super SP T120s. I got one T160, which is 8 hours, and then I got a nice Memorex T120. The T120s are your standard 6 hour cassette. So I got those. We'll sit those there. And then I got this tape here. It's called Baseball Funny Side Up, hosted by Tug McGraw. I love things like this. It's baseball bloopers. I don't even know, man. I'm such a dork for this kind of stuff. In the day, they would give these to you for like subscribing to Sports Illustrated or Sport Magazine or whatever. These would be the kind of things that were in like special interest over at the video store. I would always fall for these. I would rent these and I would come home and I would watch videos of dudes like dropping easy pop flies in the outfield. And then I got a small little pouch. I don't know what I'm really going to do with this pouch. It's like a coin purse. I just kind of threw it in there. It's kind of cool. It has like a lizard on the front. And then I got a couple pieces of computer software that I'm going to put on the online. Computer software is like a fun little flip. If you're into like flipping things, people tend to just throw it away when they're done with it. And you can grab it and you can flip it. And it's easy. It goes into a small little box. It's not hard to photograph. Easy peasy. I got one that I probably can sell for, I don't know, a little bit, and then one that I'll sell for like a little bit less. These things are easy. Just list them up there, and then you wait. And then one day they sell, and money appears in your PayPal, and you can use that money to buy toys with. It's fun. Fun thing to do. That was all good. I mean, it was more just the experience of going down there rather than like a big claims day. We did get a cool blanket. The blanket has some horses on it. We're going to put it on the bed. And ultimately, it'll probably end up being the dog's blanket. But still, it's nice. I got these shorts. Like I said, I'm wearing them. They're cozy. I wish that there was a way that I could get this across to you more powerfully. The Dig is so mellow. It used to be like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It was like a scrum, like a rugby scrum. They would bring the new stuff out, and everybody would run over there at full speed, push and elbow and bite and kick and attack. Now, everybody kind of casually walks over there. It's the weirdest thing. They don't even make you wait behind a line. You used to have to go way behind this line, and then you would run. You don't even have to go behind a line now. People just kind of mill around. They bring the stuff out, and then they walk off, and everybody casually walks up and looks. It's all so weird, man. I gotta trip out on that. Oh, let me trip out on this. I gotta go across the office again, and I apologize, but I have a little newspaper right here. Let me get this. This is The Bohemian, the latest episode, issue rather, of The Bohemian. Shout out to Sarah the Sausagetarian. She used to write for this newspaper in The Day. This is like a small little free local newspaper where they write about various things, and they have like entertainment listings. This is where you would find out like what plays are going on over at the junior college, or what bands were playing at like the jazz cafe or whatever. I always look at it. I always do. I see it over at Summerfield Road, at the Arty Farty Theater on Summerfield Road. And I was over there. I think we were watching, we might have been watching Civil War. We were watching something, but I saw this on the front. It said, "Reseller Culture at the Bins" as one of the headlines. So I went over and I checked it out, and inside there is a whole two-page article on the Bins, and it's focused on our guy, Austin. Austin is one of the old-school diggers, much like myself. He's been there since way back in the day. I think he's been there longer than me, but I can't say it's been close. But he's one of the few remaining old-school guys from the pre-days who's made it successfully into the post-days. Dude's there all the time. I see him at the flea market every weekend. Looks like he's selling stuff. Looks like he's having fun. And he's the focus of this article here. It's called Been There. Reseller Culture Thrives in the Santa Rosa Bins by Jen Hyde. In an unassuming warehouse off Yolinda Avenue in the Roseland neighborhood of Santa Rosa, there is a little-known invaluable resource for thrifty shoppers called the Goodwill Outlet. Commonly known as the Bins, this outlet is the last stop for Goodwill's regionally donated items before they are sent to landfills or to secondhand markets worldwide. Clothing, accessories, toys, and more sit in rows of shallow blue bins and are sold by the pound. The bin has long been open to the public, but in recent years, as the cost of living and consumer interest in secondhand goods rises, the bins have become a reseller job site. So this article goes and shows how our guy Austin and his homeboy make money selling stuff at the flea market, make stuff selling on the online. It's interesting. Every once in a while, an article like this will pop up. I remember back in the day, they tasked our gal, the Sausagetarian, with writing like a best of in Sonoma County. And she knew that I would go to the Dig. She knew that I hung out there a lot. And she asked me about the Dig. And she listed the Dig as the best thrift store in all of Sonoma County. And then after that, there was like a little bit of an influx of people over at the Dig. But that's always fine, man. There's enough junk to go around. I'm going to say there is more than enough junk to go around in the world. So there you have it. Reseller Culture at the Bins with your guy, Austin. Austin, I officially declare you the king of the Dig. Our guy Brian, no longer with us over at the Dig, but he's still with us in life. No longer the king of the Dig. Austin, you are now, in fact, the king of the Dig. We all take a knee to you. Let's move forward into the next thing.
Hello, I am Dr. Bucket, inventor of the spiritual protection bucket hat. The hat is awesome and is selling like sliced bread on its first day of creation. But the people demand more and more they shall have. I am now happy to introduce the Spiritual Protection Bucket Hat 2.0. Now complete with an offensive tool for the first time. My assistant Grady will tell you all about it.
Thank you, Dr. Bucket. Are you tired of the ghost bothering you? Sure, the hat keeps them from entering your brain, but do you want to keep them away forever? Of course you do. Who needs the spirit of your great uncle always up in your business when you are trying to watch Chopped? So for the first time ever, you can now use the Malakio, also known as the Evil Eye.
Evil Eye.
It's a devastating tool against pesky ghosts. Dr. Bucket, tell them more.
Dr. Bucket, tell them more.
Dr. Bucket, tell them more.
We here at Pooptronics have created a scientific device that allows anyone with or without magical abilities to shoot an evil eye at a ghost. How is it done? Simple. Fold the bill of your hat down like so. See these lenses that are on the bill. If you look through them, your eye will now be evil and able to blast beams of dark magic right at the ghost, banishing them to hell forever. Just make sure not to use it on your friends, or they too will go to hell. And there is no way to get them back without paying a substantial relocation fee to Pooptronics. The Hat 2.0 will be available soon, wherever dark magic items are sold. Until then, it is best that you stay inside.
Pre-order your spiritual protection bucket hat 2.0 today, or guess what, stupid? Your whole head will be haunted by the spirits of your dead relatives you didn't visit enough before they died. Those guys have a bone to pick with you, and they plan to pick it dry. Get in line for the new hat today, or else.
Butterfly in the sky,
I can go twice as high.
It's in a book,
a reading rainbow.
Hey, this is Master Robots, and that is definitely true. Through the power of a book, you can in fact be anything. Me, your guy, I see robots. I'm a pretty avid reader. I spend a lot of time reading. It is something that I have enjoyed the entirety of my life. Back when I was a kid, I'd spend a lot of time indoors reading. When I was in school, I spent a lot of time in the library reading. I wasn't the most popular dude there's ever been in all of times and space, and a book has always been a nice place for me to hide from the world. I still keep it up today. Right now, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things that we're going to try to talk about really quick. The first one that I have here on Reading Rainbow is Daredevil number 6. This was written by Ahmad Cooter and Albert Rotoff on art. This is another one in the continuation of the story of Father Matt. Our guy Daredevil, the lawyer, has died, gone to hell, defeated demons, and come back alive as Father Matt. I'm not really digging this very much, I gotta be honest. In this one, he has a visit from Doctor Strange, who takes him down to the underworld, and he kind of takes a look at this and that. One thing that I do think is interesting in this is they talk about the Christian God in the Marvel Universe. They kind of allude to it, the God that Father Matt worships as the father of the parish, Father Matt. He worships the Lord, and the Lord in the Marvel Universe is Yanwei. He exists in the same way that, you know, Thor and Odin and all these other guys exist. But then there is an even bigger Marvel God. I think he's called the One Who Is Above, and he is like the overlying God of the entire Marvel Universe. And then there is the One Who Is Below, who is the devil of the entire Marvel Universe. And I think that in this, they're alluding to the fact that the One Who Is Below might be going after Father Matt, which is, that's a pretty big one, dude. Having the devil himself, the One Who Is Below, coming after you, you're in a lot of trouble. This one, it's not something I'm loving. I'm kind of hoping that it goes somewhere. I've been reading Daredevil for years and years and years and years, and there have been times when I didn't dig it as much as others. One of those times is now. Hopefully it'll straighten itself out after a while. You never know. Then the next one I read is something that I am enjoying. This is Fantastic Four number 16 by North Mortirino and Reber on art. I'm really digging this one quite a bit. Each one kind of works as like a standalone little adventure, but then there's kind of like an overarching story behind the whole thing. In this one, the kids, Valeria and young whatever his name is, they embark on like a little scientific adventure of their own. They're also geniuses in their own right, particularly Valeria. She's up there with Mr. Fantastic. She's up there with Dr. Doom. She's up there with the Maker. You name it. Any of the dudes, she's up there with him. And she's only like, 2 years old. She's older than that, but you get the idea. She's a young child. But in this one, they have a school project due, and they try to invent a fluid that can eat through any surface. And then they're successful, of course, because they're super geniuses. But then they have to try to stop this thing from eating a hole through the center of the Earth and destroying all of mankind. It's good. This is the kind of thing that I read the Fantastic Four for. Little family stories, a little scientific adventure. Had a good time with that. Next thing that I read is a short one, a little juvenile book by one of my favorite authors of all the times in space. He's a guy known as Gary Paulsen. He writes juvenile books. This one costs $5.99. It is only like not very many. 123 pages. I read it in an afternoon. One Saturday afternoon, I sat down and I read The River. The River is the sequel to Paulsen's classic book known as Hatchet. I love Hatchet. Hatchet is the story of this kid, Brian. Gets lost way out in the woods. All that he has to protect himself with, all that he has to use as a tool, is his hatchet. Somehow he survives. In The River, he's drawn back into the forest. An agency, a government agency, comes to him. And they're like, you know, you did so good. We want to learn from you. We want to learn survival tactics from you, Brian Hatchet. So they go back in the woods together. Things go awry. And our guy, Brian Hatchet, has to try to find his way out again. Good stuff. Not as good as Hatchet. I did enjoy it. I also have another one here that is the continuation of Hatchet. In Hatchet, our guy, Brian Hatchet, he survives. He gets out of there. This is the story of what would have happened if Brian Hatchet was not rescued. What if he had to make it all through the winter? I believe it's called The Winter. That's by Paulsen. I have that one over there. If you've read Hatchet, I recommend that you read The River. I like little juvenile books, these little 125-page books. It's nice. You sit down, you take a short little story in all in one swoop. Recommend that. The River by Gary Paulsen. Up next on Reading Rambo is a book I read called Madonna by Andrew Morton. It is about our gal Madonna, the pop star Madonna. Of course, I know a lot about Madonna. We all do growing up. When we grew up, she was one of the biggest stars of all the times in space. But then I realized I didn't really know a lot about her background. And I found this book at a library book sale. And I'm just like, you know, I'll give it a look. I'll give it a go. And then one day when I didn't have anything else to read, I was like, let's dig into that Madonna book. So I dug into it and it was good. You don't really learn like a ton about Madonna that you didn't already know. You learn that she's very driven. She was very driven to success from early in her life when she moved to New York. She was a dancer, a classically trained dancer who wanted stardom at any cost. She decided one day to give up dancing and that she was going to become a singer. She formed a band. At first, she played the drums and she sang. Eventually, she moved to the front. This band didn't make it. They broke up. She was in the dumps, blah, 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 blah. Somebody offered her a contract. They saw her and how wacky she dressed. The rest is history. You do learn that Madonna had as many failures in life as she did successes. There were many things that drew her back, like the sex book, just any number of things. I like this. What I liked about it was it really placed Madonna into the time period that was appropriate. When I was coming up, Madonna was, she was a big star initially when I was in elementary school, and it continued on and on and on and on. But it was definitely like elementary school, early junior high, and that puts her in the late 70s, early 80s, like making her way coming up. So in a sense, she was more of a peer of like Debbie Harry and things like that than you would have thought. She was involved in that New York art scene with Warhol and Basquiat and stuff. And it was good. I like 70s New York stories. I really wouldn't recommend this one. Like, don't go out of your way to get it. It's not that great. But if you happen to find it at a library book sale, it's worth a read if you have a few days, maybe a week to get through it. And then finally, I have a book here called Deadwood, Stories of the Black Hills by David Milch. I am a giant, giant fan of the television program known as Deadwood. And this is a big book that David Milch, the creator, the writer of the show Deadwood, wrote about the real life characters the show is based upon, the actors who played them, how they chose to play them. There's a lot of backstories and costumes. I paid, I think, $16.99 on eBay. I wasn't able to find this any cheaper anywhere, but I definitely wanted to read it. I wanted to read it for a while been putting it off, but I recently read a book about The Sopranos that I really enjoyed, so I thought, let's just continue this little TV writing thing going forward. So this one, I highly recommend. I learned a lot about the real people. I learned about the real Seth Bullock. I learned about the real Al Swearengen. I have another book that I ordered coming soon, and that one's going to give me more details on the real Deadwood characters. We are running up on it, and I've been putting this off for a few weeks. We're going to have to get to it now. I recently got a message from our guy, Vino Gega, the clone of the late, great Gino Vega. He's been out there in Santa Rosa. He's 20 years old, lost, doesn't know what to do with himself, doesn't know how to go through life, doesn't know anything about the world that we live in today. He's a man out of time, and he sent this message into the voicemail for the program. So we're going to play that, and then we will come right back.
The Adventures of Vino Gega, a man lost in time.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
It's me. It's Vino G, and I am back to tell you that, dude, I am out of here. Nothing at all about anything I like is still here in Santa Rosa. So I am Audi 5 for real. I have my stuff packed and my gear all ready. I have my guitar, my Sega and all my games, my punk rock tapes, and two pairs of jeans. Goodbye, Santa Rosa. It's been real. I'm going to hit the road and see what there is out there for me. I'm guessing lots. There is a lot I don't know about the new world, and I won't learn it hanging out at Aroma Roasters at 9 o'clock. Don't worry, I'll check in from time to time and let you know what I've learned. Until then, fools. Vino Gega, out.
This has been Vino Gega, a man out of time.
I walk a lonely road, the only one that I have ever known. Don't know where it goes, but it's home to me and I walk along.
Wow, I feel a little bad about that because I got that message, I think, 4 weeks ago. So our dude is gone and nobody has contacted him since he left. So he's out there walking that lonely road, the only road that he's ever known, without anyone reaching out, without him thinking anyone cares. Vino, if you're listening, we absolutely care, but we got behind on stuff. We had to open up that Captain Carter figure. There were all kinds of things and we fell behind, and I apologize, dude. I am sorry. I hope that you're okay out there. I really, really do. I wonder why Derek didn't tell me that you had left. Maybe you guys weren't hanging out as much as you were at the start. Man, I hardly knew you, but I guess you're out there like Uncle Traveling Matt in Fraggle Rock, walking the earth, seeing what there is to see, learning about things your own way. Dude, that's the best way to do it, you know, just learn about it all on your lonesome. So hopefully we'll hear from him soon. Hopefully he'll get in contact with us. If you're hearing this right now, Vino Gega, if you're out there, let us know, dude. Teen Wundle, if you see him out there on the streets, tell him to come back. Tell him that we miss him in Santa Rosa and tell him that things will be all right. And buddy, things will be all right for you too. So this is me. I see robots. We're going to have to get up out of here. We're signing off for the episode. We'll be back soon. It's been a hoot. It's actually been 2.25 hoots this week. So with a heavy heart, I say, if you don't like what's going on in the news, go out there and make some of your own.
All right, Ann, bring an organ. And you know I got to have that. Some people listen because they want a mystery. Some people listen, then say we're whack. But if they miss the show, they get the heart attack. Now look at you, you're sitting there biting your lip. The whole world sees you as a hypocrite. Live out the first law and make yourself preservation. If the show doesn't help you, change the station. If you don't want peace in the world, love, peace, and happiness in an endless swirl. If all you want to do is keep the whole world back, you're the one that's whack. And we're
everybody. I'd like to thank all the engineers for making this record. I'd like to thank you for buying this record. But finally, I'd like to thank all the Buffalo girls out there.
Yo, Slick Blow.
That's right, DLE.
I See Robots Radio is a listener-supported endeavor. If you like what we do here and you look forward to new programming, consider helping us to bring fun stuff every week by heading over to supportthereport.com and tossing a few pounds into the hat. It's important to support things that you enjoy. Thanks and have a great week. Supportthereport.com.
Everybody love everybody. Right there up on the wall.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Never backward never. No turning around. No backing up. No selling out. No bowing down. No submit. No compromise. It's gonna be no justice.
Help me.
No justice.
Help me.
All right.
What one man can do, another can do.
Say it again.
What one man can do, another can do.
Say it again.
What one man can do, another can do.
Yeah, you're goddamn right.
Hello, no one is available to take your call. Please leave a message after the tone.
Hey, I'm calling to give you an earful about what I think about the Tortured Poets Department. And I got a lot to say. I'm not nearly as generous as you are, so my hot take is that it is self-indulgent and boring at its worst. I can understand there are people who will like it, but her casual Swifties, I don't think it's going to be something that resonates with them. Here's what I found off-putting about it. The melodies are not catchy, or they're not memorable. Let's just say that. They're not memorable, and they're not particularly inventive. And her lyrics, she needs an editor, man. You can't just publish every poem you write in your diary, and you can't just make everything into a song and think people are going to adore you. But you can if you're Taylor Swift. Doesn't mean that it's good. I feel kind of bummed for her, actually. It seems like she hasn't progressed a lot emotionally in her last couple albums, whether we're talking about Taylor Swift the persona or Taylor Swift the product, or Taylor Swift, the actual person. The blurred lines of all of those things, I think, are a lot of the appeal, that, like, tension of what is the real Taylor Swift. You know, she really has grown up just airing her grievances. I'm tired of that. That's the thing. Like, 11 albums of airing your grievances, I think it's good to move on. What is she going to move on to? Maybe she'll move on to something else after that. But, like, you can't make every single song a breakup song and think it's going to be compelling, especially when it's just, like, a mid-tempo slog that sounds pretty close to every song that came before that. What I will say is this did send me back to Midnights, which similarly had mid-tempo songs that were more subdued. And I think it's a much better album, partially because Taylor does her best work when she's collaborating with other people, and Midnights was a lot more collaborative. One thing that was fun on Tortured Poets Department is she's got a little bit of the country in her voice on a couple of the tracks. I feel like it comes from a really genuine place. It's almost like it makes her more vulnerable, takes us back to, like, the young Taylor, I suppose. Like, she's... Anyway, yeah, I kind of ran out of things to say about this album, but I don't want to listen to it much at all. The one track that stood out to me is the one with Florence from Florence and the Machine. If her name's actually Florence, I think it's not really that, but... and even that one I didn't like that much, but she needs something to break up the monotony of sad breakup songs. You just can't do that all the time. I mean, you can. It's just not, it's not appealing to me. That's all. You know, I'm not going to judge her as a person for it, but I think if she turned her lens outward a little more, or at least wrote about other introspective things besides how sad she is about a breakup, I'd be more interested in it. I think it would inspire her to have the melodies be a little more inventive as well, and just stickier. You know, she doesn't always have to write pop songs, but it's nice when a song sounds like, I don't know, new music. Anyhow, I gotta hand it to her. She can drop like 31 songs that she tore out of her diary, and the whole world is holding their breath for them. And she works hard, and she's a smart businesswoman. And she looks great in a sparkly silver bathing suit with her pink guitar. I mean, you gotta love that. So anyway, all done. Bye.
Wow.
This has been an Icy Robots Radio production.
You are listening to 92.3 KRJF in Santa Rosa, simulcasting at 88.1 in lovely Bodega Bay. Just because you haven't found your talent yet doesn't mean you don't have one. Kermit the Frog.
We have just discovered an important note from space. The Martians plan to throw us an